Hi, you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and we are... Wow, this is Ink and Worm. Hi, this is Nasa just running the show today. So Swan is out, and she is at, I believe, like a writing or a book festival, which sounds really great, and we're going to hear a lot about it. But I am joined in the studio today by the wonderful Katie Cho.
Sup?
You can get a little bit closer if you want to your mic.
Yeah. That's me.
Woo! So Katie Chow is a music blogger and general writer and photographer about music, yes?
Yes, about music.
I think that that was a good way to make it, like, make it make
sense.
Yeah,
no, like, sometimes people are like, so what kind of, what do you play? And I'm like, nothing.
Like, no.
I refresh Twitter a lot.
You play Twitter. You play people. Like a player. No,
I
that's
guess,
fine.
I don't know, yeah.
It's okay. I was trying for a joke, and I did a bad job.
Sorry.
Katie Chow and I met actually years ago, like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, we've known each other for 10 years now.
Yeah, like a small child that is fully cognizant of their world and is now like, oh no, I'm 10 and I'm an adult.
Okay, well, we were like 16 and 17, but still.
Anyway, we met at Oxford back when we did the Oxbridge program, which I highly recommend, by the way. If any high schoolers are out there listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, you guys definitely should do the Oxbridge program because you're 16 and listening to a free radio show online.
Yes. Shout out Oxbridge Academic Programs.
What?
I became slightly less dumb, but yeah, I'm still working on it.
I went there under, because that was back when I wanted to be J.R. Tolkien. And so I was like, well, he went to Oxford or taught at Oxford. So I guess I'm going to go to Oxford because that's how I live my life.
Yeah.
We met in the writing program where it was split up between like story writing.
Like prose and poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. But the prose were never like articles or anything of that sort. It was always fanciful.
Yeah. Like fanciful short prose. Fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the poetry was much more memorable.
It was much more memorable.
Of this one particular experience. So.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as people know, we normally do a writing segment, and I was trying to figure out what to do. I'm not a huge knower of poetry in like an I'm sorry way, but I did remember this one experience that Katie Chow and I shared in the Oxbridge program. As 16, 17-year-olds who thought that we were grown-ass adults but were actually more awkward and childish than I think we gave ourselves credit for, at least me. I'm sure that you were...
Oh, man. 17-year-old me. Awful. Awful. But, yeah, so... So, you know, like, we're all thrown together as super awkward teens... No one's ever, you know, most of us have never really spent time away from home any like before, and we're halfway around the world,
mm-hmm.
and
alone yeah. with like boys, like you could easily there were boy and girl dorms, but like you could
yeah. no, yeah, sneak in. People had like 4-day long relationships and stuff. It was interesting because time just moves so fast when you know you only have a month.
Yeah,
so it goes from like. I have a crush on every boy. Like,
everyone's cute.
Yeah, I don't know, like, no one is hotter than, like, everyone else the second you leave your hometown.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, my God, and all the British boys.
Yeah.
But we did get this really cool assignment. Sorry, we're rambling.
Sorry.
It's really good
memories. I was going to talk about the how everyone was, like, the hot ice cream boy.
Oh, my God, yes.
I was just like, hot ice cream boy, why are you so sad and so hot?
So hot. Well,
sorry, there was, like, an ice cream shop that everyone would go to, and, like, the girls, like, a lot of us, we would just go and, like, stare at this guy who worked there because, yeah, he was, like, the hottest person any of us had ever seen. But anyway, so, yeah, we're all super awkward. First week in...
Like, first, I think, poetry assignment, I want to say.
It was definitely in the first week. I think we had, like, some getting to know you kind of activities first. But, yes, our poetry teacher was this British grandma named Helen who wore a lot of whimsical hats. And yeah,
she did wear a lot of, and she handed us all an orange. And this is where the writing prompt. So if you at home want to copy this, this is where it becomes exciting. She handed us all an orange and said, "Eat it, and then write about it as if you are making love to the orange." To the orange, or just making love?
I don't know. I really can't remember, but basically this British grandmother shows up with a bag of oranges and is just like, write about this orange in the most graphically sexual way possible.
And, like, of course, all of us were like, what? I mean, not to give too much away, but, like, I was a virgin at the time. Never had sex. Never did more than, like, kiss a boy. And I was aware of all of that. So it got, like, really unnecessarily graphic. Also, I feel the need to point out that it must be an orange. It cannot be a tangerine. It cannot be a clementine, because tangerines and clementines are slutty. And grapefruits are a little too prudish.
Yeah, she was very clear that clementines were too easy to peel.
They just took their skin off for anyone.
She said it exactly like that.
And then grapefruits were too hard. Like, there's no way to actually, like, peel a grapefruit. You just have to cut into it. So it had to be an orange, because that was the right amount of, like, prudishness for this particular poetry project, I suppose. So we had to then write a poem about it. And of course, my original poem was like unnecessarily like,
is it a little too loud?
Way too low.
Oh, it's too low.
I can barely hear you over there. You have to keep it on where it's up to the orange on this.
Okay. Sorry. Sorry out there. It's very loud in my headphones.
Well, turn your headphones down. Now, okay. Never listen with your ears ever. Listen with your eyes.
Cool.
Okay.
Oh.
See it? You're in my phone. You're in my pocket now?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay.
I know. Now I sound very loud. Okay.
But yeah.
Great.
So, I remember being very disappointed that I did not think to take my orange to the chapel, because, like, half the class came back and they had all just, you know, tenderly loved their oranges in the chapel.
I don't remember if I loved my orange in the chapel. I don't know where I think I loved it, like, out in a field. I wasn't being particularly creative. I found, like, a nice tree and I went under it and I made love to my orange. We didn't actually have sex with the orange. We obviously just ate the orange.
No. Well, I took my orange, and for some reason the classroom was also a dorm room, so I sat in the shower with my orange, but I wasn't, like, super hungry, so I didn't want to eat the orange afterwards. So I took the orange to another class, and they were like, no, it was just sloppy seconds.
Yes, good times. Anyway, so the writing prompt was, once again, to open, eat an orange, and write about it as if it was a sexual experience. So would you like to share your writing?
You know, I think I felt, when he handed me the orange, I just spent a little bit too much time just marveling at the creation of the orange, like, and how smooth its skin was.
Yeah, you were really appreciative of that orange.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, and I was trying to get the peel all off in one piece, but that was not going to happen.
I think that's, like, an impossible thing that everyone tries.
You can do that with clementines, though. That is a plus.
Yeah, well, because they're super slutty.
Yeah.
All right, so if you don't want to read yours first, or if you don't want to read yours, I can go ahead and go with mine first. There's no pressure here. It's going to be completely, like, just deep breath.
Yes. So, I just, like, went on about how smooth the texture of the orange skin was, and then, but how even though it's the skin of the orange is so smooth, it will never be perfect. And, I can no longer read my own handwriting, I was just, like, really, like, in the moment with that orange, writing too fast.
No, let's hear it. Do you want me to go first? Do you want to feel a little bit more comfortable? Mine isn't nearly as poetic, I'm sure. It's totally fine, whatever.
So I'll just, like, read the parts that I can see, but, yeah, I was starting saying stuff like, it's attempting to remove the peel in one piece, even though I know it will part in fragments. And I ripped it apart methodically, with the thick parts of the skin still remaining on the orange. Does this orange want to be peeled? I mean, does it though? Like, do oranges want to be peeled?
Is this their goal?
Is that their goal? Even if the orange does not want to be peeled, it was inevitable. The slice is parred after some effort, yielding to my hands. The flesh is not exactly sour, but far from sweet.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is the most beautiful thing. Thank you. Oh my goodness. I'm like a little hot over here. That was really nice. Mine is not nearly so poetic. Mine is, I guess, more bitter now that I'm looking at it.
Wow. Let's hear this then.
All right. It starts off as like actual sentences and then just goes into thoughts. So I call it returning to the act. It has been 10 years since last I devoured one of you with intent. Feels almost wrong forcing off your protective covering. What I once equated to being coy, I now understand is your only act of protection. I too found that it would not. Like, does it want to be peeled? It's not perfect. A chunk of it is missing. But who among us is complete? Let's see.
Wow, that's a very... very insightful there.
Right? It gets bitter. After I undressed, it became very willing. Dry old lady like myself. Never mind. Juicy when you bite into it. Mature sex versus being 16. These are thoughts I was having. Appreciate the bitterness more. Appreciate the act. My makeup gets everywhere. I am the messy one. It squirts. I am more sensitive. I'm coming for it the way I can with... Yes, I'm coming to it the way I sometimes do with sex. Acceptance that I need to complete it, but not with eagerness.
Wow.
Oh, a beautiful moment.
Yeah. Just, if only some of, like, the guys in our class were here to revisit this with us, because I think, yeah, when you tell a bunch of 16-year-old boys to, like, write about, like, really graphically enjoying an orange, it's, that was super interesting.
I feel like mine were just as, like, stupid. I do remember specifically being, like, the juices got all over my hands and I licked them off slowly. Like, just trying to be sexy because I didn't know what being sexy was. And, like, ignoring elements of... That's what I think I noticed this time around was, like, when I had first written it, I was ignoring the difficulty elements. I was ignoring the how hard it was to peel the orange, you know, and what that meant. Or, like, the fact that I'm not a huge orange fan. Like, I don't like eating oranges. They're not my favorite. Prefer lemons.
Wait, are you saying that you just eat lemons?
Sometimes, yeah. When I was a kid, I used to do it a lot more than I do now. My teeth are super sensitive. I wonder why citric acid. but yeah, like all these little things like I ignored back then because I was focused on making it sexy versus nowadays where I'm just like, oh, right. All of this is part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I just remember like trying to really tenderly undress my orange in the shower.
You try to make it a beautiful act, but it never is. It's always sloppy.
Yeah. I don't know. What like fruit is the most elegant to eat anyways?
Oh god. Is there an elegant fruit to eat? Maybe a banana.
Yeah, well,
a nicely like ripe banana is pretty like fucking elegant to eat.
Sorry. I think now I'm just like
now we're just turning this into one big...
into one big, like...
fruit salad teen. Orgy.
Yeah.
all right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for indulging my...
Yes, this is what happens when you get together a bunch of teens who are super intent on writing poetry, which is... I don't know. I mean, I'm just going to speak for myself. That was pretty uniformly overdramatic and terrible.
Oh, my God, yes.
The second class I took was philosophy, and I don't know if there's anything worse than a teen who is very intent on knowing a ton about poetry and philosophy. So
yeah. Well, you know, being a teenager, we're all the worst when we're that age. It's okay. You grow out of it. You become bitter. Life goes on.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about what you do. So you're a freelance. You're freelance, correct? A freelance music blogger.
Yeah, I'm freelance right
writer.
Now.
That's cool. So how do you find like bands to write about? What's your normal like journey as far as that goes?
In terms of finding bands to write about, it's just a lot of it is just word of mouth from going to shows or my friends or other people music that I trust. But also, like, as a journalist, I am on pretty much every PR mailing list known to humankind. So, yes, I do have 37,800 unread emails right now.
Wow.
Yes. Well, to be fair, I have had the same Gmail account since you had to personally know someone who works at Google to get a Gmail account.
What? That was a thing?
Yeah, in, like, 2004, that was a thing.
Oh, my God.
So, to be fair, I haven't, over the past 12 years, I have not cleaned out my inbox as well as I could have, but also I would say I easily get 100 or more emails a day.
From, like, PR companies?
Mostly from PR companies. Some of it is just, like, things are on sale at the Gap that you're not going to buy, but also mostly from PR companies, because also I deal a lot with French and British music, and artists will hire different PR companies for different regions. So sometimes I'll get the same email 3 times in 2 different languages.
Mm-hmm. And then you just like go to a show. Do you, when you get free tickets sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Not to talk up how cool you are, but like,
it's not really that. I mean,
I think it's badass whenever you just like shoot out an email like, hey, I have these free tickets.
I guess. No, actually, like, it's honestly really hard to find people to take them a lot of the time. just because, like, who knows? But, no, I mean, I do, if it's something that, like, I remember to, and B, like, you know, want to make sure I can get into, like, I will pay for it. But, yeah, it's, I try to, like, give as much stuff a chance as possible, but that can be incredibly time-consuming, and, yeah, it's hard, because,
yeah. I mean,
that's with the internet.
People, yeah.
Everyone has more of a chance now, but it's also then you're fighting against so much other stuff for the same opportunities.
Yeah, that does sound challenging. Okay, so you like find bands that you really like, and then you go to their shows and you write like whatever, like an article, whatever. And then you like try and get it published, right?
It depends. Some of it's like things, some of it is on assignment. So, yeah, in the November, December issue of American Songwriter magazine, which is out now, Dolly Parton's on the cover.
What?
You should buy it. But yeah, so I have 2 pieces in that, and one was assigned, and then one I pitched myself. So it's a combination of just like timing things the right way and either having good relationships with editors who will support you or think of you for pieces.
Yeah, that's really cool. And how do you find, like, okay, so we've already brought up, like, how you find, like, the bands, but what are some of your favorite finds, you know, as far as your time in the music industry? I guess, like, the thing that I always felt was really cool about you, I keep saying this, but you're pretty cool. Not to like toot your horn too much, is that I would always come to you and you would have like specific bands that you'd be like, oh, I'd recommend this for this and this, you know. So like, what is your normal day as far as going into that kind of archive of music?
So basically, yeah. So I work from home. So I wake up, I try to wake up like by 8:30 and then like I immediately pick up my phone, delete like all the emails from the Gap. And then start, like, archiving stuff. And then, yeah, just kind of, I've really tried really hard to not go on Twitter during business hours anymore, because that's a huge time suck. But also, due to the difference between day Twitter and night Twitter, that has drastically changed my concept of what Twitter is like. But also, honestly, most of it is just like going
through
emails. What
is night Twitter?
Night Twitter is when people just tweet like weird jokes and stuff. And it's less news oriented. Day Twitter is much more intellectual.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Because night Twitter is when you're like wiped as opposed to like daytime. You're trying to make people think that you're being productive.
Right.
While you're sitting at your office job. What? That's me, not you, obviously. Sorry. So you avoid Twitter during office hours.
I'm trying to. But yeah, honestly, again, like the whole like 37,000 unread emails, that's kind of a lot to keep up with.
Do you have like a continue.
Honestly, that is like pretty much like the bulk of like day-to-day stuff for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then normally at night I'll go to a show or something.
Do you have like a favorite interview that you've done, like one that you're like, oh my god, this is amazing,
like this year or of all time?
Why not both?
Wow. Okay, trying to think of like of all time is hard. But yeah, so I guess I am very proud of the interview I did with Wild Beast for this issue of American Songwriter that's out now, just because that's something that is, they made my favorite record of the year. It's called Boy King. It's really incredible. And to be able to try to do that justice is very difficult. Like when something means a lot to you and to be able to convey how much you enjoy it. Hopefully I did that. But to also just being able to like talk to people who are very smart and thoughtful and know what they're talking about, that's also a very rewarding experience.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Because it's like this record is all about like a lot of it's about like deconstructing masculinity from within, which is a message that's more necessary than ever right now. And yeah, just being able to feel like they did, like, knowing that they have something really positive and meaningful to say makes you work harder to, like, also be smarter. That... in ways
I just love that
apply right now to me not being able to form a complete sentence.
No, I loved that. I loved that sentiment. I think that was beautiful. No, I know exactly what you mean about that, though. And I think it's really great that you get to do these interviews with people who are creating work that you admire so much, you know? And then you get to write about them and put them out there. That's something that's incredibly exciting. Let me see. I'm also having problems creating full sentences, in case you can't tell. I'm going to go with another pretty standard one, just because I do want to know this. Okay. I'm really intrigued by this entire, like, you get to interview pretty much, not necessarily your heroes, but, like, people who create work that you admire.
The all-time... Sorry,
go ahead. No, I'm really excited.
No, the all-time, like, this person, this is, like, someone who means, like, so much to me, how am I gonna do this kind of thing, is actually not a musician. Back, this was, like, four years ago, in 2012, I got to interview Simon Amstell, who's a British comedian, and he is the person for me who really sums up, like, his stand-up special called Do Nothing. That is probably one of the things I would tell people to watch in order to understand me as a person. And yeah, that was also because I was, you know, that was had four less years of experience then. That was like one of those times where it's just like freaking out a little bit, like, and that's one of those things where just be like, I would be devastated if like this person like didn't like me because they mean so much to me. But that was wonderful.
And it turned out really great.
Yeah, you know, and that was, I think, I try a lot to not get nervous because, and also from the get-go, you know, I've always understood that, like, yeah, getting starstruck isn't going to do either of you a favor. And ultimately, everyone's still just a person.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and that's... But that was the one time where it was just, like, a full-on, like, meeting your hero. Like, I was very conscious of that going into it. But, you know, it was fine. Like, you know, again, he is just a person.
Yeah.
All of us are just people, unless you're Beyonce. But, you know.
Yeah, and then you're God. my goodness, could you imagine that? Is that one of your goals, to be able to interview Beyonce?
I don't think so. Oh, actually, yeah, I would not, like, yeah... I don't think I'm the right person to interview Beyonce because I do this because I wasn't really allowed to listen to pop music as a child. So, like, you know, I wasn't starting from Destiny's Child. So it does not have, like, the same, like, impact for me as it would for someone who grew up with Destiny's Child completely and has really consistently followed her career. Though, obviously, like...
Yeah, no,
she's... There is no denying her standpoint in today's social, like, pop culture landscape and the fact that, like, yeah, she means a lot in terms of, like, pop music being taken more seriously, even though there are still a lot of people who are opposed to that. But, you know, pop, yeah, like, you can be playing the Super Bowl and still have this huge social impact.
Yeah, definitely, which she does, which is always amazing.
Yeah.
I forgot about the fact that you weren't able to listen to, like, pop music when you were a kid. It's been so long.
Right.
That was something that...
Well, I guess, yeah. Well, when we met, like, so basically I spent, like, after 2004 or so, I was spent a lot of time, like, pretending to be British on the internet. And I would just listen to all, of, like, this stuff that, for the most part, had very little impact in the U.S. just because... Yeah, I was very obsessed with LiveJournal, and also when you're in high school, it's like, wow, let me, you know, keep doing this one thing that makes me, like, different because for some reason that seems like appropriate social currency.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it probably wasn't.
Oh, no, it totally was back in high school. I think it is still now.
Yeah.
It's what separates us from high school students is that we are just, like, appropriately different.
Yeah. But it was also, you know, this is just what I did in high school. So, yeah, at that time, I was actually very aware of, like, what was popular in England when we went. And, like, let's see. A lot of that stuff isn't quite around anymore, but some of it is. I remember, oh, that was the summer, I think that was when the original Valerie was popular.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, that later became Made Famous by Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
The original song was popular in England at the time. And I remember that was when Lily Allen was starting and Smile and LDN were super popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just, like, go, like, they had TVs in Topshop that we'd be playing music videos all the time. And I would just go walk around and, like, look at clothes that I wasn't actually going to wear because I was, like, afraid to wear it. And just watch music videos on the Topshop TV.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember you taking me to, like, a record store and helping me pick out, like, cool albums.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I think I just, like, hung out with, like, HMV a lot, too.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember which ones you picked up. I'm going to have you do the same thing now, though. Is there any, like, bands that you'd recommend right now, and would you, like, give a specific reason as to why?
Let's see. Yeah, so Wild Beast, Boy King, that is my favorite record of the year. That's something that I think is really important for people to hear right now. I'm really looking forward to seeing them in New York this week.
Mm-hmm.
Though, frankly, yeah, hearing the words, like, these are blessed times coming out of someone's mouth is honestly going to feel like a tiny bit of a farce, even though I know that's completely unrelated to, like, anything that's going on in the world.
Well, it's unfair, because I feel like up until Wednesday, we were living in this social bubble.
Like, well, on Thursday, I went to see this band called Slow Club, and their new record is, I guess, it's roughly called One Day All of This Won't Matter Anymore. And to see people, like, buying posters that say one day all of this won't matter anymore, when even though it's completely not relevant at all, like, it feels like everything happening this in this time frame will matter so much in the future. But yeah, anyways, that's something that I think everyone should listen to right now. I also want to shout out my friends in Museum Mouth. They're a queer-fronted pop-punk band from North Carolina. And their album is called Popcorn Fish Guinea Pig.
Oh, wow.
You heard that correctly. And that is out now through Rory Records, which is run by Max from Say Anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, and at this point, yes, it is vital to continue to support records made by women and minorities. And it's just, like, such a... It's also a really good record about losing friends as you get older.
And which is incredibly relevant right now, I feel like.
Yes. Either it happens naturally or something just makes it happen. Yeah. Either way. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually really want to talk about the what you think music will play in the next 4 years. But first, I just want to give a shout out. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Ink and Worm. And if you would like to donate to our Patreon, please feel free to go onto our website, radiofreebrooklyn.com, and go under the donate button. Yeah. all right. So after that brief moment, I did want to talk about what you think music's role in these next 4 years will be. And if there's any bands or anything of that sort that you think would be relevant.
Because people immediately started saying that music is going to get better, but even, is that really soothing at this point?
Is it a really nice, it's like, hey, well, at least our art's going to be.
Yeah. But I was discussing with my friend Genevieve yesterday that even during the past administration that women and minorities have been still been making great art that is defiant and just very meaningful in these times, because while there has been so much progress, you know, there's still a lot to fight for. And when people say that music will be great again, it's just like, oh, we're looking for the next American Idiot made by straight white men. Or maybe not straight. I don't know. I don't know that much about Green Day because I was not allowed to listen to pop music until 2004. Anyways, so things like seeing the popularity of Power Bottom, like, that's something that's even in an increasingly progressive era is still vital and means a lot to so many people. Like, they're not a huge band yet, but everyone who knows them loves them so much because that's something that speaks to people. And, yeah, that's going to continue happening, and it's going to continue being more meaningful.
Yeah. Well, because right now I think the things that we can do outside of, you know, take action is to create art. And I think that art is going to be important.
Yeah, but still, like, even when things have been better, there's still a lot to fight for. Like, before this, I was hanging out with with my friend Lily, who is an artist in London, and long before Brexit or anything, I first got into her music and then was introduced to her because she put out this incredible song called Apartheid. And, you know, it's, like, still relevant. I think this must have been 2013 or 14
mm-hmm.
That she put out this track. And it's going to be more relevant than ever because everyone's nervous about what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. definitely. I mean, I think of bands like Pussy Riot that were created kind of band slash performance artists that were created out of the kind of, I don't know, tension of their country. Tension being a kind word. And I guess it's just one of those things that's like the only bright spot one can look at is that we have this venue. We have art. We have our voices in order to just kind of fight anything.
Yeah. Though, I don't know. Like, when I went to a 90% white college in Tennessee, I would spend a lot of time listening to Das Racist to pretend that I had non-white friends because I just simply couldn't really in college. And that was all made during the Obama administration, except for maybe Combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
Oh my God, I remember that song.
Yeah. But, you know, and then they continued to put out 3 records of very, like, very political music that was not related to Combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell. And even though that was all made during a more progressive time, you know, as racial minorities, that there's still a lot to fight for.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a true statement that even during progressive times, there are a lot to fight for. And there's a lot that art and music could do. You know, because we're still not perfect. We're still not in a utopia. And that's, I guess, what art is there for.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, another one of my favorite records this year is Benito Generation by Caro Benito,
mm-hmm.
Who are this sort of, like, it's half English, half Japanese video game rap from London. And part of what's great about it is that it just exists in this multicultural utopia. Like, all the songs are about random objects or taking selfies, and it exists in this, like, total paradise where there are no real problems,
mm-hmm.
which is part of what makes it great. Like, there is a lot of... There's an aspect of escapism to it that's going to continue to be important. And similarly, I've seen, like, a lot more great disco happening this year.
Right. You wanted to talk about that.
Yes.
The rise of disco. The re-rise of disco.
Yeah.
Sorry. Disco isn't dead.
Yeah. Well, disco is, for the most part, never super dead, but... my mom raised me on the Bee Gees, which I didn't super love as a kid, but have definitely grown to appreciate that background more as an adult. And yeah, right now there's so much of that coming back. And
can you think of a reason why? I'm so intrigued by that. Like, well, why do you think disco has re-emerged?
There is, like, a certain, like, hypnotic quality to it that is very soothing, and also it just comes from, like, these roots of escapism and decadence that sort of, yeah, provides more of, like, an escape for mm-hmm. people.
That makes sense. That would make sense. Do you have any, like, writers as far as, like, in the music scene, writers who you follow, who you look at for... inspiration or who you aim to be like, do you have any favorite music writers?
I would say that, well, I changed my major to journalism in 2008, but I think I've got extremely serious about music writing and the state of music writing when Vampire Weekend released Contra in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I got super into being able to understand, like, how criticism and can interact with music and laying out, like, the social landscape. And at that time, my main inspiration was Nitsu Abubba, who at the time, I believe, was at Pitchfork, and now he's an editor for the New York Times.
Oh, wow. Cool. Is there any reason in specific?
Just the being able to see people's thought process and the ideas going into it. Also, not strictly music, but I actually just read Manhood for Amateurs by Michael Chabon.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just, you just want to like cut out sentences and frame them. There's no other way for me to put it.
Yeah.
Like, I just, yeah. Want to, like, wallpaper my life with his sentence structures.
Well, that's really great. That's really exciting. Okay, so usually we end our shows with, like, a series of rapid-fire questions, which aren't necessarily rapid-fire. So, like, deep breath there. Okay, so let's start with a simple one. What's your favorite brag?
Brag?
Yeah, like, okay, so you go to a party and someone's like, tell me something cool about yourself. And then you dig deep into your memory of awesome things that have happened to you and you pull it out and are like, this. So, like, mine, for instance, and it's one that everyone knows very well, is, like, Sir Patrick Stewart once, like, kind of flirted with me. He called me, like, babe. As he was walking out of my old work. And it got me all flustered and happy. One back when I was in high school was that I went to Oxford. It was like something I brought up in every conversation. Well, when I was in Oxford.
James Franco was the speaker at my high school graduation. I don't know. Yeah, a lot of the stuff that's coming to mind is just like purely circumstantial. Like being in music, people are weirdly impressed that I went to college with this band called Diarrhea Planet, who are great, but also it's just like, all right, people like lining up to take pictures from like dudes who just hung out in my friend's basement. Okay, great. Yeah, James Franco was a speaker at my high school graduation, though. That's still, like...
That's a big one.
Palo Alto, yeah.
James, not to, like, one-up, but I have this memory of James Franco. He dated somebody in the class below me, and...
Well!
At my college, not my high school, that would have been creepy. At my college, he dated someone in the year below me, and so they got to do a show that he produced and directed. Like that entire year because he was dating this one chick.
Wow.
Yeah, right? It's like, well, all right then, Mr. Franco. Thank you. Did not open it up to the other years. I'm not cool with that.
Yeah. James Franco's just like so...
He's a weird guy, like in a good way, I think.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of his career when he was doing the best, he decided to do a soap opera.
Right. I mean, every decision he makes is just, like, very interesting. And also, I feel like he's, like, successfully gotten so weird that he's completely desexualized himself.
Yeah.
Like, he's... Because I remember, like, you know, when I graduated from high school, it was just like, oh, man, like, the hot guy from Spider-Man's gonna be there.
The hot guy from Spider-Man was Tobey Maguire. This is me making
fun
of
myself.
You say
so.
No, I'm into nerds. It's okay. No, but I know what you mean. It's really...
And now it's just like, he's just James Franco. And like, if I see a picture of him, it does not register to me that he like might be a handsome guy like or anything. Like, it's just like all of, like the weird sculpture then everything that he's made at this point is just really overtaken that.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next question?
Okay, so next question. This is going to be another one. I'm just pulling out all my favorites. Is there a book that's like your, like that changed you or that influenced you when you were in puberty, like during puberty?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter?
Obviously.
Why obviously?
Well, I think it's also been interesting to see a lot that people have been talking about how Harry Potter shaped a more socially socially conscious generation, because it very clearly puts like things in this frame of racism and oppression,
mm-hmm.
and preventing that.
That's a good one. That's a pretty intense one. Do you have a specific of the seven?
Not really, because it was just, you know, something that was just there year after year, starting in, like, the third grade.
Yeah, I guess that's how, for a lot of people, it was probably a huge, like, a huge influence.
Because, like, the last one came out the summer after I graduated from high school.
Yeah. That went through us for most of our childhood.
Yeah, I feel like there should... I used to be super into High Fidelity. Mm-hmm. Like, I read that in high school. I was like, yeah, this is me. but then I reread it a couple of years ago. I was just like, okay, I think I need to draw some limits on, like, the dude whining here.
Yeah. That was me in Ghost World, the movie, the book.
Yeah,
I remember watching the movie when I was in high school and just being like, this is my life. Mm-hmm. And I watch it now and I'm like, these people are the worst. I don't like anyone. I mean, that's not true. I liked a couple of them, but Enid was the worst. All right.
But when you're a confused teenage girl too, you know, like, yeah, that's what you love.
Exactly. And having somebody who reflects that about you, who, like, doesn't feel quite cool enough. It's mm-hmm. yeah. What book are you currently, like, reading?
I just finished reading a book called Tiger Baby Strike Back.
What? What is that about?
Well, it was a rebuttal to, like, the Tiger Mom book from mm-hmm. a few years ago.
Oh.
So it's basically about how, like, Chinese parenting messes you up for life.
Ooh. Well, that sounds interesting. Did you find it relevant?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm currently, I just started reading, I don't know that this is one of our rapid fire questions, but I wanted to ask it anyway. Anyway, I'm currently reading, A Bright Room Called Day by Tony Kushner, which is a play about, like, pre-Nazi Germany.
Okay.
Which I'm just reading because I feel like it's relevant. Bombshell. What book are you currently avoiding reading? Like, not intentionally necessarily, but you mean to read it and you keep thinking, I'm going to read this book, and then you keep not reading that book.
So I studied abroad in Ireland in 2010, and I was like, I'm going to read Ulysses. And I have been reading Ulysses since then. I keep it next to my bed for when I have insomnia.
Mm.
Yeah, it works super well.
That's good. That's not actually great.
But I have also been reading this book for seven years. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a...
I've been reading this book for a long time now.
That's a commitment to not reading a book.
You know what? I read Infinite Jest when I was in high school, so I get to do this now.
I'm not judging you. I have so many books that are on my, oh, I should read this, but I'm not right now list. Like, I have probably, like, just all my books. I think just all the books I have in my house are on that list. I'm a little bit ashamed of me.
I try to stay optimistic. I still, like, even though it's been years and years, I would not say I've given up. The only book I've ever, like, concretely given up on reading was the book version of American Psycho,
because
mm-hmm. I was just, like, a little bit, like, more, just way too intense.
You know, like, what? Go ahead.
Like, the movie is incredible. Like, I used to be really weirdly uncomfortably obsessed with, like, just quoting lines from it, which, to be fair, I probably still do now. Like, anytime someone mentions anything with Phil Collins, I, you know, you just gotta be like, do you like Phil Collins? But yeah, the book was just way too much. I got to the hamster scene and I just, like, threw it down and could not keep reading.
Oh my god, that sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
I have not read it or seen the movie. It seems like one of those that's
gonna be
too much.
The hamster scene is not in the movie. And, like, the movie is, like, just more overtly a comedy, too.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I feel that way about Game of Thrones. I straight up cannot read that book. It gets way too intense. So I'm just like, no, I'm okay. I'll just watch the TV series. Which brings me to my next question. Do you have, like, a guilty pleasure, either TV show or a podcast or anything of that sort that you, like, listen to and are kind of not necessarily ashamed, but it's not the first thing you admit about yourself?
Let's see. I don't know. At this point, like, is there really any point in guilty pleasures existing. Now that I'm not a pretentious teen.
I guess that's true. It's like, yeah, these are all elements of me. Move past it.
Yeah. Like, at this point, you know, like, being obsessed with Great British Bake Off is very common.
is that your, like, current Netflix obsession?
Yeah, I love it. Like, I rewatch it even though I already know who won. Like, it's just so good. And it just because it exists so completely outside of, like, any, like, political agenda, it is really good to watch right now.
Yeah, that does sound really relaxing. I've been, not like it's a guilty pleasure, but it's been my latest obsession. I've been rewatching Parks and Rec.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, it's too bad that Netflix doesn't release stats, because I would really enjoy to see how much people have gone back to, like, watch Parks and Rec this week to be like, well, this is when government's fawn.
Yeah. Well, it's so that I could watch. I rewatched pre the election. I was feeling really anxious, and I rewatched the season where she beat Paul Rudd.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just beat Paul Rudd. And it made me feel like, oh, maybe a woman can do it. And then now I was watching the episode where, like, I skipped ahead to the episode where she got recalled.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I need TV to tell me it's going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Though, have you been watching The Good Place yet?
I did. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I love that, like, Adam Scott's the king of hell.
I know.
So good.
I'm so happy for Adam Scott. Adam Scott's, like, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So great. At least, yeah, TV.
I actually just caught up with it. I haven't been watching it. And then I got up, my friend, like, forced me to watch The Good Place. Mm-hmm. And my God, it's so good. Yeah. Do you have a writing ritual or whatever whenever you, wow, that was big. Do you have a writing ritual for whenever you write your articles, your blogs, your...
Let's see. So, yeah, interview transcription is the worst. For better or worse, I'm actually really good at it, but it just takes way too much time. I use a program called Express Scribe, and then I have to, like, turn my phone off and put it in another room and then, like, turn off everything else and just, like, make myself type all the words out after the recording. And then once I have the transcript, I just go through and highlight and then paste together all the lines that I want to use. And then normally when I've been listening to a record, I'll just keep, like, an email draft or a Google Doc of mm-hmm. notes of, like, descriptions of the music that I want to use, and just eventually it all comes together. I would say that I mostly start from the middle, and then finding the lead is the most difficult part for me.
Hmm.
Which is tough, because that's what you need to get people's attention, but...
Like the through line of your article, you mean?
The opening sentence.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that makes more sense.
Right. Sorry.
No, I love it. The jargon of sorts. Sorry, my computer went quiet and I had to turn it back on.
But yeah, so, yeah, I normally start at the middle and then find the beginning at the end.
That sounds cool. That's a good solid ritual, I would say. One more question. If I were to walk into your house and, like, check out your bookcase because I'm super nosy, what would I see?
A lot of deluxe versions of Scott Pilgrim.
Like, of the entire series? Like, do you have multiple?
Well, I do have, the paperbacks, except not right now, because Sky, if you're listening to this, which you're probably not, but if you are, I can't believe I lent you those books, like, a year and a half ago, and, you know, it takes, like, 20 minutes to read each one, so, yeah, just get on that. Anyways, but I do have, like, the deluxe hardcover versions, too, mm-hmm. because I've just spent a stupid amount of money on Scott Pilgrim. I saw the movie in theaters 3 times. So, yeah.
That's really impressive, because the movie was underwhelming compared to the books.
The movie didn't even do that well. I think me and, like, the people that I got to go with me accounted for like half of the North American box office.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I love the Scott Pilgrim books. I was reading them while I was babysitting because the people I babysat for had them in their collection. Mm-hmm. So I was like, chilla. And I would just sit and read it while the kids were asleep. Yeah.
But you know what's weird now is realizing that we are older than those characters.
Oh my God, we're so much older than all of them. It's okay. Not so much older, but like they're like in their early
20s. Yeah. It's like, I still feel like this. I'm 27.
I know. Cool. I know. And when you first read it when you were like 16, it was like, oh yeah, this is going to be what it's like to be in my early. No. No. Yeah. We're all just Scott Pilgrims. I had that same realization when I was watching Futurama the other day, when I had first watched Futurama, I was like, man, Fry's life seems sucky. And then now watching Futurama, I'm like, damn, Fry's got it put together for like a 20-something-year-old in New York. He's got a job, an apartment. I don't see the problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for coming aboard with us. Let me get this all set up. Once again, this is Ink and Worm, and I'm going to go ahead and leave you with a word, take it or leave it, triptych. I ask a shame.